Yes, normal voice. Here we are doing a podcast.
Yeah, imagine doing a podcast and just like all an Australian voice. You just did it all the way through for no reason.
Yeah, imagine. Imagine that, Sean. Somehow the fucking cat's out the back.
I thought that Matt Stocks was from England. No. He just said he's moved from Birmingham. Yeah, Birmingham, Adelaide.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sappening Podcast.
Sappening. You're listening to episode 33.
Woo!
Cheers, Ric Flair. Of Sappening Podcast with Sean Smith and my good friend Ric Flair.
It's me, Morgan Richards.
Boo. I was hoping I could do that thing where you will something into existence.
Oh, you know, right. You just thought I'd magically turn into 16-time world heavyweight champion Ric Flair?
Yes.
No, sadly not.
No, I know.
I'm not styling and profiling, but I am here. So here we go, episode 33.
I don't know what's going on. Yes, episode 33 is happening. And our guest this week is the multi-talented rock, UK rock journalist, DJ, podcaster.
Journalist.
I said journalist.
All-around party animal, that is Mr. Matt Stocks.
Yes. What a lovely chap.
Very lovely. He invited us down to his humble abode in London.
Yes, brand new.
Brand new, literally. We were the first people to be in his house on the same time he entered the house.
For the first time.
Yeah. He's going to be talking all about that.
Yeah.
And some things and giving an insight into his life, the music industry, the world of journalism, which I'm excited for a lot of people to hear about.
His near-death experience.
Yes.
Nearly died.
Yeah. And how he's worked for people like the likes of Kerrang, Team Rock Radio, Scuzz, all of those. And partying with some crazy bands on the road with Steel Panther and Zebrahead.
Nutter.
So,
yeah.
Bit of everything.
And he's doing the Fireball tour now, coming up soon as well. So
yeah, he is.
Yeah, awesome. We had a good chat with Matt. And, it was a good day out. We did it a while back in the London. We went to the Big Smoke, as they call it, for some reason. I don't know why. And, we had a good day. So thank you very much to Matt for doing it. And, at some point we spoke about me going on his podcast, Life in the Stocks, so...
Yeah, well, I haven't been invited on this podcast yet, I don't know why, but...
Well, you're not really interested.
Oh, that's probably for the best, then.
You're only 23, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody likes you when you're 23.
True. At least you said it, not me. But, I'm excited to have him on. It's a real opening and long conversation about all those things we stated. But, again, I'm excited for everyone to hear the side of journalism that's not that great.
Pushing journalism.
Yes.
It's good to have somebody that's not just in a band or a musician, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of different aspects. So I think it'll be interesting for everyone involved.
Cool.
But, of course, when this is out, if you're listening to it the weekend that this is being released, then we're actually going to be at 2000 Trees Festival.
Yes, this comes out Friday, 12th of July.
It does. We will be there from Thursday, 11th of July to Saturday, 13th of July. I had to do quick maths while looking at Sean then.
Yeah, which is tough.
Yeah, so you're either listening to this at 2000 Trees, on the way to 2000 Trees, after 2000 Trees with a hangover.
Wait a second. If you're listening to this at 2000 Trees, what the hell are you doing? There are bands on that deserve your time.
Ah, the Sapman Podcast drinking game.
Ah, let's get wrecked! Correct!
Or you just didn't go to 2000 Trees at all and you're quite sad about it.
Yes.
And if you are sad about it, we've got a little secret to tell you.
Are we allowed to be...
Well, sick? Why not? What are you going to do? Sue us?
Yeah, possibly.
Probably.
No, don't say probably, because then they'll be like, oh, they're expecting... Possibly. They
possibly.
Might. Go on, what were you
going to
say?
I was going to say, if you've missed out on going to the festival this year, then next year's tickets from...
Sunday the 14th.
Of...
July. So 2 days from this coming out on the Friday.
Yeah, you can get 20% off all tickets for next year's event.
Are we meant to be revealing that in this episode?
Well, it doesn't matter because we've said it now and I'm going to leave her in.
Tidy. All right, cool. Yeah, so 14th of July, check out 2000treesfestival.co.uk and 20% off next year's tickets already. Tidy,
yeah, 2000 Trees 2020.
Woo!
Ooh.
Sounds like they're running for president.
Yeah, but of course, if you are listening to this at 2000 Trees, come and find us because I'll be eating ice cream and high-fiving everyone in the mosh pit.
We're going to have an intervention.
But anyway, while you're checking things out, the best thing to do is go and check out our Patreon page.
Nice.
Which is patreon.com/sapnin.
Yes.
Sean, why should they go and do that?
Because if you've enjoyed any of the absolute bollocks or nonsense that we've spouted so far over the past 33 hours, and you've enjoyed any one of support or help in any way you can make this carry on, yeah, please think about checking out patreon.com/sapnin and helping out, supporting.
Yes, and any of those lovely exclusive tiers and goodies gets you into the Sapning Podcast Community Group, which is a heap of laugh and people make friends and it's just great to see. So get involved.
There's more than one laugh.
There is one. Yeah.
You forgot the S off laughs then.
There's at least five a day, I reckon.
Yeah, it's a major laugh.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
Anyway, but while you're doing that as well, go and check out our social media at Sapnin Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Sean, how would you spell it?
SAPPENINPOD at SAPPENINPOD.
I'm glad you did that because as you've probably seen on those social media accounts, I can't spell.
Yes.
So I'm working on that as well. Apologies to Bob.
Bob was furious. Strangely, Bob was angry.
Yeah,
no way.
I can imagine you having to deal with his anger didn't help. So I'm sorry about that.
Just get on with the podcast, for God's sake.
Yeah, fine.
We've waffled for too long.
But here's the lovely Matt Stocks. He's going to tell you everything about journalism and being a DJ.
I'm breaking your back. Mental.
Sapnin!
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
It's happening, boys!
Yes! Yes! And as you can hear, this week's guest is the multifaceted...
Big words, eh?
Yeah. Normally I go with tremendous or fantastic. Yeah. The multifaceted...
You've been reading that dictionary I saw in your house tonight, yeah.
The mighty Matt Stocks.
What's happening?
Yay!
That's been my favourite part about the whole podcast. I've tuned into a few episodes now. Okay. And the moment I've been looking forward to the most, other than seeing you and talking to you, is the moment where you hit record and we all get to go,
Sapnin!
Yeah, so there we go. Good. And it was every bit as good as I imagined.
Oh, good. Well, that was the end of episode 24. Thank you very much.
See you next week for episode 25.
How are you?
I'm doing good, mate. As you can see, we should set the scene for your listeners. So today is the 2nd of May.
Correct.
When this goes out, it'll obviously be a future date. But as we stand in the present, in time now, it is the 2nd of May, and I am in my brand new flat.
Yes.
This is my first time in here, and I opened the door and arrived with you two in tow.
Yes, you did.
And it's lovely. No private moment for me to sort of take it in and go, oh, yeah, this is the place I'm now going to call home.
We just came in.
It's just podcast gear out. Mic's on. The cleaning lady's cleaning as well.
Yeah.
So she's around. So if you do hear some noise in the background, then that is what that is. But I'm really good, dude. I'm excited for a new chapter in my life. I've been living out of suitcases and on couches at my ex-girlfriend's house, in my mum's house, in hostels. I've basically been living in other people's area and space for 6 years. I figured it out.
Wow.
Which is kind of the last time we did this.
Yes.
Sean very kindly took the trip to Birmingham and sat in on my penultimate live show on Kerrang Radio. And then a few days after that, I moved out of my flat in Moseley after Kerrang shut down. I'm sure we'll talk about all of that in a bit. And I haven't had my own bedroom anywhere since then.
Mad.
So, I'm really excited.
Yeah, you've got a lovely place. This is absolutely
stonking. Yeah, it is. It's a very,
stonking.
Very nice, humble abode. So, I'm glad. Yeah. I've been reading the dictionary as well, right?
Bloody hell.
It was a long Megabus app, see?
I know what I'll do. I'll read the dictionary. I'm going to speak to Sean and sort the podcast out. Let's be silent and read dictionaries together.
Well, maybe that's a good thing. Podcasts need good words, don't we? So...
That's true. Anyway, back to our most important guest.
Do you know what I love? Thesauruses.
Do like a different word. So series two of Life in the Stocks is coming out.
Launched this week as well. It seems like it's all happening in one go. I'm going to tell you a story as well in a minute. It's not a very good one, but I'm hoping that you'll appreciate the angle that I'm coming from. But yeah, I just launched series two of my podcast.
Nice.
I've just launched my Patreon page as well. I've been doing the show for 2 years without one of those. And loads of people have said to me, like, you need to just get on it and get it live and get it out there. But I've been biding my time, waiting in the shadows, because as you know, I've been in the quote-unquote music industry. I use quotes loosely because it's a fucking mess.
Correct.
As you both know,
I can agree with that.
Trades. But what I've done over the last decade or so of doing what I do is I've kept everything. So I've kept every radio and audio interview that I've ever done.
Yep.
Oh, wow. I've kept the notes for every print article that I've ever had published. And so I've got an archive dating back almost 10 years with, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of interviews.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I'm a DJ, as I'm sure you know as well. Your listeners might not, but I do that too, like live touring.
Well, let's go through your list of jobs.
Let's go through the list.
Journalist, DJ, podcaster, television presenter, model.
Not model. No. But then again, in today's world, all you really need to do to be a model is take a selfie of your face and share it on the internet.
So model. So,
hashtag model.
Sex work. Oh, yeah.
Influencer.
If you put the hashtag in, you are whatever the hashtag is.
It's legit. Yeah. I did the most sexy I've ever got with my profession is I used to DJ in a strip club.
Nice.
That was when I started out on Kerrang. I worked there for 8 months unpaid, full-time, whilst I was sort of doing the internship, earning my stripes. As I'm sure you'll know from your side of things, Morgan, they make you do in this here music industry. Like, yeah, you just work for free forever. But you get to say you work in the music industry and you're getting quote-unquote experience, so it'll be worth it in the long
experience
run.
Experience or exposure.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, anyone who ever tries to turn that on me now, I'm like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Yeah. But so I had to make some money somehow. So I would DJ every Thursday night in a club called the Honey Club in Solihull, which is where I've spent the last few years of my life living. Well, that's where I grew up and went to school and everything. And yeah, so I'd be there on the podium going, don't forget, guys, you can change your pounds into tipping dollars. Come on down the front next on stage.
Crystal.
Crystal. She was a popular one. She was a popular one. You've obviously
they
been
often
there.
Been there.
You've
seen
you've got Crystal, Champagne, Chardonnay. Yeah. So that was a fun stint. Oh. But yeah, so as you say, a multifaceted man. I do many jobs. And I've kept, as I said, the material from most of them over the years. So my Patreon page, if anybody wants to check out that, they can do at patreon.com/lifeinthestocks. And on there, you'll find not just bonus podcasts, but also archive interviews, print articles, DJ mixes, all kinds of like experiential stuff as well. So one of the things that I've offered the listeners the opportunity to do is to sit in on an interview.
Oh, sweet.
After 12 months of patronage, because obviously you can't be handed out stuff like that willy-nilly. But if people sign up to a specific tier, I think it's the top one, Thunderstruck, I named all my tiers after AC/DC songs as well,
as you do,
and after 12 months on that tier, you can you can see the list of who's coming up and go, oh, I'm a big fan of Sean Smith, I want to sit in on. And that's actually what Morgan did. He's been pledging for
yes, I knew it was the reason
it was going somewhere. But let me tell you this story real quick. Because everything is changing at the moment, and because I'm in a period of transition, I wanted to get a tattoo. My friend Max is a great tattoo artist. He operates in Birmingham in his studio called the Second City Tattoo Club, I think it's called. Maybe there's some guitars in there as well. And
Guitar and Tattoo Club.
I asked him, I was like, will you ink me up before I go? So I've got, you know, a memory of Birmingham, because I've left there before, but this time I really feel like there's no going back. I'm 33, I'm not getting any younger.
Yeah.
I've had one go down in London before, it didn't quite work out, but this time around I'm a man on a mission. So I wanted something that's going to give me purpose and direction. And Game of Thrones, are you Game of Thrones
fans? Never seen an episode.
Okay, this story's going to go right over your head. But in the latest episode, everybody will have seen it by the time this goes out. So
Spoiler alert. Being the spoiler fella. Carry on. Okay. We've said spoiler alert. If you watch Game of Thrones, turn off now. Come back in 5 minutes. Go.
So in the most recent episode, which won't be the most recent by the time this goes out, I'm sure the series will have finished by the time this goes out, but in the most recent one, Arya, who's been my favourite character since day one of the show, has a very significant scene. I won't even say what it is, but there's a phrase that surrounds this character that's sort of been her catchphrase since, I think, season one. And it's a question that's posed to her when they say, what do you say to the god of death? She says, in retort, not today. And having been through the accident that I went through a few years back, and having been a man who has almost died, I can relate to it on that level, but also from a depression point of view as well, which I'm sure is something definitely you, Sean, can probably relate to from the last few years of, you know, you feel like your whole life's been taken away from you. You go to dark places. And so I'd like to apply it to that context as well. So it's not only I don't want to die today, but it's I don't want to feel this way today. I'd also like to liken it to, you know, any sort of negative thoughts that are encroaching on one's life, any sort of mean spirited two-faced people, all of that. My response to all of it is not today.
It's nice.
On an even more basic level, I'm desperately trying for the 100th time to give up smoking.
Yeah.
And so at the bottom of all those list of things that this tattoo represents to me is every time I feel an urge or a desire to spark up a fag, I look down at my leg and I go, not today.
Nice.
So I just, and so I got it done yesterday. So it's weeping a bit at the moment.
Like,
so yeah, that's my new tattoo, my third in total.
That's awesome.
Okay. Little reminder at least, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, nice visual reminder. And it's, you know, symbolic of not just Game of Thrones, which is a great show and I love that phrase, but it also has for me multi-layered meanings.
Definitely
multifaceted.
Well, I'm gonna take that on now. I think I'm gonna take on not today, despite not watching them.
And going back, you just mentioned that you've recapped a lot of all the notes and interviews you've ever done throughout your years. Was there actual reason behind that? There must have been a lot to keep up with.
I think I just always knew that one day, or I hoped that one day, it would be of some value.
Okay.
And I feel like if anybody is in this game starting out, not only is it good to just have, but it's good to have for personal memories and also for personal growth. You know, like say if you go back and read an article, is it just writing you do or presenting?
A bit of everything.
So you'll know if you go back and see some of your work from 3, 4, 5 years ago, you like to think you've improved and progressed since then. And for me, it's not like I just sit in my bedroom listening to years of me interviewing people, but it is helpful every now and again to delve back and go, wow, this is how far I've come.
Yeah.
To remind you. And same thing with, you know, if you're a songwriter, you got old demos, you listen to them and go, oh my God.
Yeah, I made the mistake of thinking that my band would last forever, see. So I didn't think I ever needed to collect any. Like, my mother's got all the magazines and stuff we were in, but I just thought, oh, we'd be doing this forever, man. I could just probably go to a shop and just pick up a shop and my band will be in there. Wrong! Wrong! So if the internet gets deleted now, I'm going to have no proof that I was in a band ever, apart from if I go to my mother's house.
And your memories, obviously. Yeah, you'd hope they're still there.
And my memories.
But yeah, do you need... Whatever you do, you know, if you have kids, and I know people now... I mean, I personally would like to keep my children, if I did ever did have kids, off the internet. And I wouldn't want their face to be all over Instagram, but I would certainly want personal photos for personal memories. Yeah. And I've always just been a very... What's the word? Nostalgic kind of a person. Well, maybe not nostalgic. What's the word when you romanticize and cherish the past? Perhaps it is nostalgic.
Just a hopeless romantic, maybe.
And I've always liked to keep a track and a diary of experiences, places I've been, people that I've met, gigs that I've been to. Do you know what I mean? Like anything from a gig ticket to, you know, a box of matches from a restaurant that I enjoyed in Portugal once. Yeah, like, nice. I've always just been a sucker for that. I guess I'm a hoarder, but I'm a selective hoarder. It has to have, you know, a nice personal memory attached to it. It's not just, I really like fake flowers, so I need every branch of flower there is to complete the set.
No, I can relate to that. I was a bit shocked with keeping all your notes, because some of my notes can get extremely messy that I wouldn't want to look back on. But
well, basically, it's just one file is the notes, one is the finished article, and then it's just in different folders, so you've got print, audio, and then by year. And the other thing that helps is I'm super OCD, so the organisation of it all is very just so. So if I want to go, right, I need an Ugly Kid Joe interview from 2016, I know exactly which folder to go and get that. And at this point in time, with the Patreon page and the launching of that, it's been a massive help, because I can just go, oh, what do I feel like sharing this week? Billy Corgan, Radio, 2015. Boom, there it is.
Oh, yeah, you've got a crazy backup log. I strongly recommend that anybody listening to this checks out Life in the Stocks, obviously. Check out Matt's Patreon page and stuff as well. You mentioned your accident.
Yes.
For the listeners.
How long you got? That's the problem. Because we could just talk for an hour about
that's
that.
That's true.
I'll condense it down. So Kerrang finishes. It's over. It still exists as a station, but it's very much, you know, an online pulled back operation. As you know, Sean, you came on the show several times, and it was at that point in time, based in Birmingham, massive listening figures, like 1.3 or 4 million a year, I think, at its peak. Loads of awards, great team of people.
Yeah.
You know, everybody from Johnny Doom to Kate Lawler, Alex Baker, just a brilliant... And I was 24 when I got that gig. So, I mean, it does not get any better than being 24 years old on an evening show on a national radio station, meeting the likes of Corey Taylor / Sean Smith on a daily basis. And
I'm glad he went for the three biggest.
So what you're saying is it had its ups and it had its downs.
As all things in life.
It had two ups and one massive down. Try and guess which they are.
Some of my favourite on-air memories with Sean, actually, we used to do like these DJ battle-off style heats, didn't we? Yeah. Where we'd have a specific theme for each round and then you'd have to trump the other person's track choice. Mm. And so, yeah, I was in that bubble. As you say, you think it's going to last forever. You don't think, oh, this is going to be taken away one day.
Yeah.
So you're just in it and you're loving life. And then one day we were called into work early, everybody was, for what I now know is bad news, but at the time had no idea. A strategic meeting was how it was presented to us. If you ever hear that now, listeners, that means that you're about to lose your job. So just quit in advance. Yeah. Just, you know, resign before they have the chance to fire. And so we were called in early and the big boss said, basically, we're hemorrhaging money, the funds aren't there, and we're closing the station. Half of you are going to lose your job. We're going online only, and everybody that does stay is going to take severe pay cuts, and that's that. And it was one of the worst days of my life. I think it was worse for a lot of other people in many ways, because they were all family people. And they had mortgages and, you know, kids and real responsibilities. The one saving grace for me was that I was mid-20s, single. Yeah. All I had was my month in, you know, Moseley to pay the rest of the rent on. And then that was it. I was all good. But what it did also do to me is I wasn't, A, equipped mentally to deal with it. Everybody else just sort of brushed themselves off. Because I was the baby of the station. Everybody else was about the age I am now, early 30s. Yeah. So they were like, it's okay. We'll get another job in the media, or we'll just go into a new career, or at least I've got my wife, my kids, whatever. For me, I was like, fuck, not only is my job and my income gone, but my life is over. Because as you all know, right, when you work in the music industry and your whole life is the music industry, The minute you're no longer in the music industry, all these so-called friends and people that you would surround yourself with all the time, you know, all the gigs that you'd go to, all the festivals, even just at weekends, like your whole life is basically the music industry. And then once you're not in it anymore, everyone's like, oh, you know, it's a bit awkward, isn't it? Because do I invite him? And people, you really find out who your true friends are.
Correct.
And it's the most soul-destroying realization that a lot of these people are only friends with you because of what you can get them, give them, or the sort of status they can enjoy by being in close proximity to you. And that's not me being arrogant saying
no,
that.
No, that's not.
That's
true.
The harsh reality that's, of it. Is fuck, I want to hang out with Sean Smith because he's in a successful band and they're on the cover of Kerrang. And then, oh, Sean Smith's no longer in this successful band. Well, what can he offer me?
Yeah.
You know, and you see people for the real scum sucking fuckers that they are.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And so that kick started in me a month long. Period of severe, and I mean severe, dark depression, where I decided I'm 27, the best years of my life are behind me, I'm going to drink myself to death. And I wanted to kill myself, but I didn't have the courage to go with an all-out singular act. Mm. So I just thought I'll do it slowly and depressingly, and I was just wallowing in this just devastation that was my life. And I'd go out in Birmingham and people would be like, you're the guy that used to be on Kerrang.
Oh, brother.
Talking about you and your, like, your own life in past tense. And you're like, shit, I'm a ghost in my own life. Yeah. Like, my life is actually over. I thought it was, but now I know.
Yeah.
Because I'm just this relic before I'm even 30. So I was just drinking every day with a, like, you know, with a purpose behind it, which was to hopefully end my life prematurely. And then what happened, at pretty much my lowest moment, my great friends in the band Airborne, and I'll never forget this act of kindness until the day I die, they reached out to me and they were like, we can see just from, because they're on sort of, you know, social media and Facebook and things like that, and I just, I keep in touch with a few people who I know, you know, people like yourself who are mates beyond the business, and they were like, look mate, like, fucking, we can see that you're down on your fucking luck and you need to get back in the game, so I fucking come on the road with us, make a fucking, like, a documentary feature film, and then you got that as your new fucking calling card, and then you can just start making fucking movies. Like, you're too good, your talent can't go to waste.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so they didn't want a documentary. They weren't at a point in their career where one was really necessary, but they invited me on the road for their UK tour in 2013, paid me a set wage every day, basically gave me all the footage, you know, said keep it, do what you want with it, and then we'll, the label will buy it off you at the end.
Oh wow.
So there's like a nice chunk of money at the end as well.
That's incredible.
Fucking what a band,
right? And that is so rare, as you'll know.
Oh yeah, like, unbelievable.
That is so rare, that loyalty and that generosity. But then here's what happened. I finished the tour, and just because I think I'd gone too far down the fucking dark rabbit hole by this point, the minute I was off that tour, I slipped straight back into depression mode. Yeah. Even though I had this stuff, this, like, this get out of jail free card, this second chance, the damage in my head was done. And I slipped straight back into old habits. And I got drunk one night. I was so broke, I didn't want to get a taxi home because I was in this bar till like 5 a.m, just smashing booze. And I was like, I'm going to walk to the station. I'll climb over the fence, break in, sleep at the station, and then get the first train home. And I don't quite know what happened to this day because I was blackout drunk, but I basically woke up on the tracks.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, how the fuck did I get here? And I'm on the train tracks. It's about sunrise, so I know that the station is, if not yet open, opening imminently. And I went to try and get up, obviously, because you want to get the fuck off the train tracks, and I couldn't stand. And that's when I realized I'd landed in such a way, I'd later find out I'd fractured my spine in 3 places.
Ouch.
So I couldn't stand. I couldn't get up. So I went to, like, push the weight all onto one of my arms to lift myself up that way, snapped my wrist in doing that. So I'm there. I also had a broken sternum. I had 5 smashed ribs, and I was just lying there in bits, like my body was in tatters, fucked, just like crying for help, thinking this is how I die. I'm going to get sawn in fucking half by a train, wasted out my mind, and that's going to be the end of me. Like, what a depressing, awful way to go. What a horrible thing for my family to have to go through. I felt like the biggest scumbag on earth in that moment, because I knew, although I'd wanted to die for so long, the reality of actually the recklessness in which I was about to go out just broke my heart. And I said this on another podcast recently, and it is something I would say to anybody that ever feels those moments where they're like, I don't want to live anymore. Like, I don't have the courage, the strength. Nobody would miss me if I'm gone. If you ever get to that place, you really need to think about the people in your life who do care about you. Remind yourself that you are loved.
Yeah.
And really be upfront with yourself and have that conversation with yourself, where are you willing to deal, well, not deal because you'll be gone, but are you willing to allow the people who care about you to feel the kind of pain that they're going to feel if you do take your own life? And that was really what refreshed my whole mindset at that point in time, already before I went through the, you know, months that followed of fucking, does he have surgery, doesn't he? I ended up spending 3 months just flat on my back in bed whilst the bones recovered. And I should say, obviously, I finally got off the tracks. A guy who was opening the station heard my cries for help, called the ambulance. They came in with a stretcher, got me off. And so then I spent 3 months just in hospital whilst my bones healed naturally. And in that time, obviously, you know, that's a quarter of a year in bed. I couldn't sit up. Every time I had to, like, take a shit, I'd have to ring the bell. The nurse would come. So all ego goes out the window.
Oh, yeah.
All, like, earthly follies and concerns really does just become completely inconsequential, and you really kind of wake up to how special and beautiful and transient and fragile life is. And if you have it, you've got to use it, you've got to make the most of it. Even if you're feeling the lowest of the low, you've got to try and respect it for what it is and appreciate this gift of life that you've been given, and use it as wisely as you can and to the best of your abilities, just by trying to live a good life, be a good person, like, give out love. Have an open heart to receive love in return. Try and live without meanness. Look at me, I'm going all fucking Jerry Springer. But
nice.
these were all the lessons that I learned. And, well, I know that you'll appreciate what, that whole...
Definitely.
That mindset of, my life's over, it's all gone. Like, it does not get any worse than this. What's the point? What is the point? And thankfully, I had the hand of someone, whether it be a power of something greater than us or just random fate or whatever, but something stepped in at my lowest hour and was like, you want to die, do you? Well, let's test that theory out. Yeah. And I found out I really didn't. I was like, I don't want to die, this is too amazing. I've got all these, and, you know, I had so many friends come and visit me. Luckily, it was over Christmas time, so everybody was off work and back. So, you know, there were some days where I'd have like 8 people around my bed. Felt so much love. Facebook was a great tool for that period as well. Like, old girlfriends from years in the past would reach out and just be like, look, whatever happened between us, it doesn't matter. I'm really worried about you, I hope you're okay. And I reconnected with girls that, you know, I hadn't spoken to in years.
Awesome.
And we're still friends to this day, because, you know, I wouldn't say that anybody should go and risk their life to then appreciate the true meaning of it, but yeah. I was really lucky in that sense that it was almost snatched from me, to the point where I was just, you know, spiritually awakened awakened.
Mm. Yeah.
Sorry, and was like, damn, all right, we're only here for fucking the time that we're here. Yeah. Let's use it, let's not waste it, let's not disrespect it, let's not throw it away. So then I moved to London straight off the back of that, as soon as I could walk again. I was like, Team Rock Radio, new gig, back in the zone. Was like, nothing's ever going to crush me like that ever again. Then I fell in love with a girl, and then that had not anything like as bad an impact, but the breakup that I went through 2 years ago almost now, that crushed me and knocked me back for about a year, but not in the same way, to the point where I was like not wanting to live. It just, you know, I was living in pain and with a broken heart for a long time because I thought that she was the one. Turns out she wasn't, but then that's fine. And I do find with all these struggles, with all these like trials and tribulations that life throws at you, you find out what you're made of and who you are. And actually, you really learn to respect the things in life that matter and the people that matter. Yeah. So that's where I'm at now. So day one, new flat on the Sapman podcast.
Yes.
And life is really fucking good. It really is good. But life is only as good as you yourself make it. That's what I've learned.
I agree.
You got to get out there and get it done and make it happen.
I completely agree. Like you said, after the band finished, I slipped into that dark place of... just feeling lost and kind of lonely, and especially when, I guess, like you were the voice of Kerrang Radio. Like I guess I was the voice or long face of the blackout. And then that gets taken away from you, and you just, oh, okay, then, well, maybe it was me because I was the face of it as well. So I was like, oh, maybe it's my fault that we're no longer together. So no, I completely agree with you about going into like dark places, and you've got to find the light. You've got to find the positive in things, and keep family and friends around you, because if it wasn't for like my girlfriend and my family, I don't know where I'd have been. Like it was mad at the time, but we're all good now, and we're moving forward, and
and you've got me in your life now, which is the best thing that's ever happened to you, because you've got this podcast, though.
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah, kind of, Morg, yeah. No, no, you've made me go back into that now.
I've just seen a new face just switch on Sean Smith there. It's a shame this isn't visual, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, to go back on that kind of path once again, the podcast that I host, and I'm sure it's ignited in you two a newfound love for your craft and what you do and the music business actually as a whole, because you can fall out of love really fast with this industry because it can be cruel and unkind and just gross.
Well, yeah, I reckon.
But you also are in control of your relationship with it. And once I started my podcast, I was like, right, in 4 years, I'd lost my job on Kerrang, my job on Team Rock, my freelance work with Metal Hammer and Classic Rock and all of those magazines, Scuzz TV. I never got fired from any of them, but they all went out of business, every single one. And then I was the resident DJ at this venue in London as well, the Brooklyn Bowl, and that closed down. And I was like, man, every company I work for just goes out of business. So the only solution is it's going to be a long, hard slog. But my only option now, unless I just go and work in a different industry altogether, which I'm not yet ready to do, is I need to set up my own company, set up my own thing, start trying to monetize it and build it. And it's going to take, and I've been doing mine for 2 and a bit years now, and I'm barely, well, I've only just moved to London today because I can only just barely scrape rent. A lot of people who are 33 are living at home with their mum to save up to buy a house. I'm saving up to move back to London to rent a flat at 33, and you feel like a failure because you look around at all your friends. But if you own something and it's yours, like what you two are doing with this as well, no one can take that away from you. No one can tell you what to do, what guests to have on. And because it is yours and you've worked for it, there's a sense of pride there. And I was listening to the podcast that you did, who was it with? Maybe it was the first episode where it was just you two. But you were saying, since doing this podcast, I've got a band. Like, I feel a new sense of vigor and purpose about my life because it gets you plugged back into the industry in a positive way. So you're not looking at it and going, oh,
well, like four
I missed that. It's like, shit, I'm back in it again.
Well, like 4 years ago, it was like a year after the band split up. I was like, I don't give a fuck about any bands. In my opinion, I've gone back and watched live videos of the Blackouts. There wasn't many bands who were more entertaining than us. So I was just like, I don't, you know, I've seen it all. There's nobody who can do anything on stage anymore that I haven't seen or done myself. So I was just bored of music. So I was like, I don't even care about new music. And then literally through doing this, we've met. Like, even, I spent so long away that when I came back and I was seeing friends in bands when we were doing the podcast, I was always going into them really nervous. Like, what are they, you know, do they give a shit? You know, whatever. Like, do they even remember me? And yeah, it's been just so nice just seeing people again and seeing new bands and seeing their enthusiasm for it. That is literally, as you said, it's brought back the enthusiasm in me. And I, you know, I'm busting to play shows with my new band and do more of these and like even help younger bands out. Like, I went to see Holding Absence with him in Cardiff and it reminded me of the old days, like the Funeral for a Friend, Kids in Glass Houses playing small shows in Cardiff days. And I was like, this is awesome. I've missed this. Yeah, it's definitely reinvigorated my love for music and the live scene and seeing people again, because I was just I was just up for shutting myself off and just...
Yeah, and for me, I don't think my love for music is dampened or anything, but with doing this, I've seen...
Ah, you're 23 though, Morg.
Yeah, but I've seen
is that how old you are?
Yeah.
Imagine you've got your whole life ahead of you, man.
I know, right?
It only gets worse. Enjoy it now.
That's the thing. yeah, no, but...
It does. It gets better, man. It does get better.
But doing... No, but doing this, I've seen, like, another side of it where working for other publications, trying to be... You have to be a bit more professional and structure everything right, and the bands are... Can only say this and that, but with this, I feel like people are excited to come on and they're opening themselves up to have a laugh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're not, even, yeah, so they're like, not even here to, a lot of them don't even care about promoting. That's, I think that's what you find with most rock bands is the majority of them don't give a shit about promoting their stuff. It's normally like the labels or the press people are like, oh, get this in or don't say this. Whereas all the bands we've spoken to have just been... Like, lovely and people who just want to chat.
And just bring up like little stories that for a lot of people might go over their head, but for them is just hysterical.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And,
we haven't had any tough guests yet on our podcast, have you?
You will. Well, it depends, though, because I imagine you're probably going to be in a friendship to some extent with most guests or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, well, we've
for the majority.
It's been a mixture of people you or I have kind of known on some level.
Yeah.
A couple of bands that we didn't know, but we've been like we've had connections with and stuff like that. So there's always been a common ground. Really.
Yeah, we haven't had anybody we don't know at all, kind of yet, have we?
No, we haven't.
That's where we'll come.
Have I met Mayday? Mayday Parade was probably the only band we have met before, but they were nice. They were lovely, just lovely boys. So, have you had any awkward ones?
I've had one that I didn't publish. It was so bad. Yeah.
Can you say who it is? Or?
I will, yeah. I've said on another podcast who it was. And sometimes people just don't understand the concept of a podcast.
Yeah. Mm.
Because people are so run through the mill of the PR machine, they expect any interview is going to be some kid with a list of questions, reading off them. Question number one, what can you tell us about the new album? And then they give a set answer, which is a couple of sentences, and then they very
pointedly
finish the sentence and then await the next question. And sometimes you'll be there just giving them everything, working really hard to stimulate this conversation, boom, 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 and they'll just go, yes.
Yeah. The one answer.
You have to just keep fighting, and then after a while you go, you know what, this ain't working out, let's go our separate ways. So, you know John Spencer?
Yeah.
John Spencer, Blues Explosion.
Yeah.
Kick-ass rock and roll band, still love the music, still think he's a cool motherfucker on stage. And there was a tour which the Melvins were doing, and he was support in his new guise. It's still basically John Spencer Blues, but just without the explosion. But it's the same kind of music, you know what I mean? Just less explosive.
Yeah, it's a lot less energetic.
Well, it is, and he's an older guy now, you know. Like in the 90s, he was this chaotic, and he was a very inspirational and influential figure. And without him, there wouldn't have been bands like the White Stripes, I don't think, you know, delving back into that old blues canon. So he's a very respected dude in the music world, and his music's still, I think, great. But he was on tour with the Melvins. I did this great interview with Buzz, well, great podcast with Buzz, chatting freely, loving it. And then I went next door, and it had all been set up and arranged. Went next door to chat to John, and he was like, I'm going to go comic book shopping. Can we do it in an hour? And I was like, well, yeah, fine, but we had arranged a time, and I'm here, so now I'm just going to have to sit around for an hour whilst you go and buy comics, and you're like a 50-year-old guy. I was like, you're not buying them for your kids. They're clearly for you. So I was like, fine, I'll wait because I'm a professional. And for me, like, it's always worth going out of your way to get that interview, which might be the best one you've ever done. Do you know what I mean? Even if it seems like it's a bit of an inconvenience, it's like, I've done some interviews on the biggest hangover ever, and not even the thought, sorry, of cancelling has not even crossed my mind, because I'm like, I have to get, you know, I'm not going to go and not speak to Doug Stanhope.
Yeah.
No matter how I'm feeling.
Lovely.
I'd been up all night partying, and I went.
I bet he had as well.
Obviously. He had, and it was actually the perfect meeting of minds in that sense. So I hang around for an hour. He comes back, and it's very clear within seconds that he just does not want to do this interview, despite making me wait an hour and agreeing to do it in the first place. And in that scenario, it's not on the press people, because his PR is a mate of mine, and I know he's not one of those pushy PRs that's like, you have to do this. He chose to do it. He agreed to do it, and he made me wait an hour, and then he just sits down, and he's just looking at me like, I'm a bag of shit. And I was like, dude, like, this is, you know, it's like if you go on a date, this is the wrong kind of attitude to go into the situation with. And it was just awful. And every topic I raised, he would just be like, and he was just a cantankerous, miserable old git. And it was meant to be an hour. And after 20 minutes, I said, cool, I think we've got enough there. And then he looked all shocked. And that's when the ego kicks in with some of these people. What? No, but you wanted an hour. I'm still going. And I'm like, you ain't going, mate. You never even started. Yeah. So, and I said to his PR, I was like, look, I'm really sorry, but this just isn't going anywhere, because it's that bad that people will actually listen to it and think negatively of him, like they will now once they've heard this story. Yeah. But I'm not shit talking the guy's a musician. He's brilliant and he kicked ass on stage that night. But for me, it's just, if you don't want to do it, just say no. I'm not forcing you. You know, I'm not for a company that has to deliver a certain amount of, you know, this cover star has to be on this week, this feature has to be in. As you said, the podcast is such a loose, free format. There are no rules, and that's why it's so great. But if you don't want to do it, just say no.
Yeah.
Don't say, and then turn up and be an absolute cunt. Yeah. The best thing about podcasting as well is the community itself. And that's what I've come to love, is having worked in quite a nasty industry where there's a lot of ego, yeah, and there's, you know, not very many jobs. So everybody's insecure, and I get it, and egos come into play, and everybody's trying to cover their own tiny little island and look after what little they do have. And as the more the industry, I think, continues, the less and less jobs there are. So people are getting more and more, you know, irate and insecure and anxious. But with the podcast community, you know, I've been on in the last couple of weeks something like 5 podcasts.
Oh, nice.
And everybody's just like, here's the door, come on in, it's open, everybody's welcome. And it's a proper community, which the music industry isn't. Yeah. I don't care what anyone says.
I think we haven't got into the community really yet.
We're
too far away.
Yeah, yeah.
We're in Wales.
Yeah, but we're relatively still new, aren't we? Oh, so we're still finding our feet and stuff.
But yeah, we haven't. Yeah.
But you do have
the first podcaster.
You do have a podcaster on the show now, and you're going to be on mine after this.
Yes. So.
And Stu, I know you're talking
with
to him.
Yeah.
The thing with Stu is he interviews like a relentless machine. Like every day, he's like, just did a chat with so and so. I'm like, what's your back catalogue? Not your back catalogue, sorry. Like your forward catalogue. he's probably about 80 weeks ahead at any point. Yeah. Like he has so much material in the bank because he's constantly working and constantly on it. But you will get him. He's up for it.
Awesome.
And you should do one of these live events
we were going to talk about this after Morgan brought up on the bus about us. Yeah, yeah, we'd love to.
Attack of the Podcast too. I should say that as well. So if anybody is interested, in London on the 20th of July, which is a Saturday, I'm doing an all-day podcast event with myself. My guest is Pancho from Dirty Sanchez, which is going to be interesting and hilarious. He's actually on my show in a week's time as well. And then after me, it's Chris and Stu. So Stu does 2 podcasts. He does Off the Beaten Track on his own, and then he also does Hardcore Listing with his mate Chris. Both of those are on the Distraction Pieces Network, curated by Scroobius Pitt. And then thirdly and finally, it's going to be Andy Ellis and Thomas Turgoose from This Is England, who also have their own podcast called Overrated Everything.
Nice.
So it's going to be those 3 podcasts back to back with short intervals in between. Chris and Stu and Thomas and Andy have confirmed their guests, but they haven't announced them yet. So I don't want to jump the gun, but we will be announcing them by the end of May. All the guests will be announced, and tickets for that are on sale now.
Nice.
Via ticketmaster.co.uk. I'm also doing just a shameless self-promotion now.
Cool.
Getting into the sales
round. No, I love it.
Keith Buckley from Every Time I Die.
Yes.
Nice. Lovely man.
Favorite bands of all time.
He's a wonderful human being as well. Such a sharp mind, really interesting guy. And the reason I'm doing this is because really, I don't mind saying, I lost. The one podcast I've lost was his. We did this great chat and the battery on my Zoom H4 recorder died right at the end. Now, usually when that happens, because it's happened before, it saves.
Yeah.
This time it didn't for whatever reason. So I was like, damn. So I was like, Keith, I can't just go to him and say, do you want to do another podcast? Because it'll be like, well, what happened to the last one? So I was like, okay, fancy a live Q&A? bit of money, meet some people, bit of money.
Nice.
So he's like, yeah, we'll do it. So that's happening the week before on Sunday, the 14th of May. So they play 2000 Trees, Every Time I Die, on the Saturday night.
We'll have that.
And then on the Sunday, Keith's going to trip over to London and we'll be doing there in the same venue, these 2 live events at the O2 Islington Academy. This one's an evening event though, so doors will be at 7. And the format of that is live interview with me and Keith for about 90 minutes, super in depth, cover the full breadth, not just his music but his writing, everything. And then we'll do a short interval and then audience Q&A after, so the fans get to ask him questions. Photos and signings and all of that at the end. But they're good fun, man. We did loads of the Sanchez boys last year.
Yep.
We did about 13 in total with Pritchard and Dayton. I did a great one in Birmingham with Jesse Leach, did one in Manchester with Sean Ryder. And I'm just trying to do as many as possible because they're a good little learner, but they're also a great way to build the podcast, because somebody who's coming in as a fan of Keith Buckley might not necessarily be aware and often isn't aware of my show.
Yeah.
But then hopefully you do a good job and afterwards they go, shit, I really like that. Yeah. I'm going to go check out what else this guy does.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh my God, here's 100 episodes of all kinds of stuff, comedians. And that's the thing you'll find as well, is the more time goes on and the bigger your back catalogue, people who are discovering the show a year into its life are then going to just find this treasure trove and wealth of episodes to dive back into.
We've had a couple of people this week who've been like, oh, I've just listened to the first episode and now I've got to go back and listen to all 23.
They go back and find things, or they've just discovered us and found their favourite artist did one 7 weeks ago and then they've gone straight to that. So
we're trying to get
you should do a live event in Wales.
We would like to.
The tram shed has been in touch with us, MJR, about doing a live show, but I don't know. It's a bit of a Wayne's World 2 situation. Like, will people come? If we book it, will they go?
So you try, Sean, and you know, start small. You know, just do like say a 50 cap room, make it intimate. To be honest, I find those size events for Q and A's are nicer anyway. We did one show in Newcastle with Pritchard and Dayton, which was something like 350, and that was one of the biggest we did, if not the no. In fact, the Cardiff show we did was the biggest. That was 400,
right?
And I just put the live audio from that one up, and that is just, you know, it's a very different show. If you've got 50 people and they're listening quietly and attentively, you can make it a lot more of a, you know, a storytelling affair. Yeah. When you've got 300 to 400 people in Cardiff on a Friday night or in Newcastle on a Friday night getting pissed up, it becomes a very different beast.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's unruly. But I actually do find the optimum number for me is between sort of 50 and 150. Anything nice over that, it does get a bit crazy. But yeah, dude, just do an intimate show, see how it goes.
Ooh. Yeah, no we,
yeah, it's definitely in the for the plans in the future.
Yeah, it's in the pipeline. So yeah. And yeah, if you one in the future, if you've got one for us to come on,
we'd love to have us. Yeah, we'd be more than willing.
We'd love it.
Yeah. Attack of the Podcast 2. I love sequels. Who's been your individual favourite people to interview so far? That's what I do.
Well, they've all been lovely, haven't they, really? We haven't had, as you said,
we haven't had a dick
experience.
No,
yet.
I'm waiting for someone to come on and be a dick.
We haven't had John Spencer yet, then. Your John Spencer.
There was the Dougie episode where I got very excited.
Oh, yeah. He was creaming over Dougie Pointer the whole time.
Why? Because he's a handsome man, or he's just a big McFly fan?
A bit of both, to be honest.
He'll call him B. And little column M was out.
Did he manage to maintain his professionalism?
I did. I got some. Before I got some good questions in that one, so
And I didn't realise the May Day Parade is one of his favourite bands, right?
And he went like that quiet whilst booking it.
Yeah, no. Which is, so he went, oh, should we go up and interview May Day Parade? And I was like, I don't really know. So I don't know. And he was like, oh, come on, we should go up. And we finally got there, we did the podcast with them, and we left. And then later on, and I found out it's Morgan's favourite band. I was like, well, if you just said to me they are my favourite band, I'd have gone, let's go do them then.
I'd like to say they're not my favourite band, but I do enjoy them very, very much.
You did, yeah, but you were more into them than you got on to me.
Yeah, because the first album is completely banger city, so...
There you go. Yeah. Oh, there you go. Well, that's all you had to say.
Okay.
Rather than me going...
It's just a complicated ruse to meet one of his favourite people. Yeah. I mean, we didn't even record that episode, Sean, I'm going to be honest. I didn't press the button, sorry.
Can we go
and do it again?
I just wanted to look at them.
I noticed from looking at your back catalogue that most of your guests have been English, and that's great. Right, because if you're building a UK audience, then you're a lot more plugged in to, you know, an immediate community. What I've found, mine's been a bit more of a struggle because loads of my guests, especially early on, have been and were and continue to be American.
They haven't stopped.
A lot of them. And for the style of show that I do, I quite like people that have been around the block. You know, they've been at the top of the mountain, the bottom of the gutter, everywhere in between, and they've had quite a storied life. And often it is these American bands that are still going 20, 30 years into their career. But obviously you have kind of tapped into that whole, I guess, touring community that you used to be a part of.
Yeah.
And, you know, bands that are still touring and active. And so you've probably found that you've got a more immediate, instant audience.
Yeah.
And they're probably sharing the episodes as well. I found that a lot. Like, I've had some great guests, you know, but like Gene Simmons ain't sharing a Life in the Stocks chat that he's done. Do you know what I mean? So that chat isn't actually reaching anything like as many KISS fans as I would like. Whereas I imagine everybody from Charlie Simpson to, you know, Dougie, who's like been on the show, has gone, yeah, check this out, shared a link.
Yeah. Have we had anyone who hasn't shared a link?
Call them out.
Trying to think now. I don't think we are.
I don't think so.
So you've got 100. I'm not going to share it now. I'm going to break the hit rate.
Yeah.
You got way more followers than me anyway. So it won't have that much of an impact.
It's nice, isn't it?
It's a good little gig.
We love it.
I've enjoyed it. You know, everyone's been really nice and we've had some great... It's just nice to hear people's stories from bands who have toured for years to new bands who are just excited that everything's happening to them now and they're seeing themselves getting in Kerrang, getting on the TV channels, getting on these big tours.
With ours, like, we get to see both levels. Like, we get to see Def Havana, who've toured for years, and you get Hot Milk, who are fresh out of the bag, who are excited to do it, and then ultimately made me excited about music again, and then holding absent. Like, it's just all exciting. Mm. And yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it so far. So we got to keep it going, and we...
Yep.
So,
Dude, there's nothing like the feeling when you hit 100 episodes. You know, I mean, I'm a sucker for any multiple of 10.
Yeah.
50 was a big one. But when you get to 100, when you reach that milestone, it's a proud moment.
Yeah, we're on, 24 now.
Yeah, we're in the 20s, isn't he? So.
A quarter of the way there, Sam.
Oh, nearly there.
One thing I wanted to mention briefly is I know you do a lot of, you go out with a lot of bands sometimes to do DJ sets and stuff like that, and you're very friendly with the Steel Panther lot, as well as Zebrahead.
The
first time I actually met you was backstage at a Slam Dunk.
All right.
With Zebrahead.
All right.
Because.
Oh, I did it.
Because Dan.
I met a lot of people that night.
No, I just remember because Dan got me, there was like a band only or something, like artists after party, and Dan from Zebrahead snuck me in.
Isn't he the best guy?
He is hilarious.
Yeah.
He is hilarious.
Dan from Zebrahead, he's got one of those like 1920s circus man mustaches.
Nice. Yes.
That come all the way out here. He like waxes them and bends them around. He's got a completely bald head.
Like Dr. Robotnik.
Exactly like him.
Yes.
And he's the most energetic guy. Like he's ripped, he works out, but he'll party all night. Like there were nights on that tour and on the full tour that I did with them and Real Big Fish and Less Than Jake, where he'll party with me all night and then he'll be up. Like I'll sleep in bed till like, you know, 1 or 2 going, trying to sleep off the hangover. He'll be up at 9 going for a run in the gym, just like working out. And then on stage that night, crushing it. He's a machine.
Nice.
But sorry, what did you want?
I was just
bumming Dan over.
I was just going to say stories about, just trying to get stories from you from those kind of experiences of jumping on the tour like that, with especially Steel Panther and Zebrahead. Who everyone knows who does love a party.
Well, the thing with the Zebrahead guys is they are, I think, actually the nicest group of people that I've ever come across in this industry. When you DJ and you go on tour on your own, it can be quite a lonely, solitary experience because you're surrounded by people every day. But every band, as you know, has their own crew and little touring family, and everybody's sort of in their own little bubble. Not because they're assholes or they're being aloof or unfriendly, but just, I think, to get through touring, because it's such a relentless way to make a living, people are missing their wives, their kids, home. You just sort of fall into your little habits, don't you?
Yeah.
And you're there in the middle of it, like a DJ, excited to just be on the road. You want to party every night. You're single. You're like, this is going to be amazing. And then you get there and all the bands just kind of keep themselves to themselves, and it can be like sometimes pretty like bum out depressing. Yeah. Even you're like, oh man, I'm in like bloody Germany just on my own, like wishing I could just share this experience with at least a driver or a tour manager.
Yeah.
But because your fees, you know, they're not exactly making you loads, so you want to keep costs down, so you just go out on your own. But Zebrahead were the first band to really put their arm around me at Slam Dunk one year. They were like, oh, you don't have a dressing room? Ours is yours. You can come in here, help yourself to drinks, food. You need to use the toilet, the bathroom, the shower. Our house is your house. And they were the first band in 3 or 4 years of me doing that ska and punk stage at Slam Dunk to do that. And all the other bands I know, and they're all perfectly nice, but Zebrahead were the first band to go, we got your back.
Nice.
And so when we did the full tour, they let me ride with them on their bus, which again, you know, that's their home for that time. Mm. And you're encroaching on their personal space. And DJs do come with a pretty negative, you know.
Yep.
People just think that the guy who presses buttons in between the set is a worthless piece of shit. Basically, you know, you're way, way down there in the list of people who are important or respected in any way. But I take pride in what I do, and I consider myself a very good DJ, and I think I bring a lot to the shows. And again, Zebrahead, one of the first people to, I think, recognize that and be like, this isn't just some drunk loose cannon.
Yeah.
He's like actually a great performer. He's an integral part of this show. Let's fucking put around, like, make sure he's not on his own. And
yeah,
so yeah, they're lovely. I mean, they're all pretty straight, as you'll know as well. Like bands these days, because they need to make money from touring, none of them are really partying like they used to, because they don't want to fuck up the show, they don't want to jeopardize their relationships with promoters, they certainly don't want to let their fans down. So the one good tour story I have is with House of Pain.
Nice.
Oh, okay.
It was the 25th anniversary of the first album they did, I think, Shamrocks.
Yep.
And Shenanigans. And it was going to be the three originals. So it was going to be Danny Boy, Everlast, and DJ Lethal. Bring it on!
I couldn't help it.
Oh, yeah, you've jammed out with a biscuit, haven't you? You know all about DJ Lethal.
I've had a go of his decks.
And there was no other bands on the bill, just me. And the original plan was to put together this package bill that would celebrate every corner of the House of Pain spectrum, from the kind of Celtic stuff to punk and hardcore to hip-hop, and each group was meant to represent a different facet of their overall sound. As it came time to do the tour, I think the promoter either ran out of time or House of Pain just wanted the entire budget, and they were like, no support. So they just said, well, we'll just get Matt to DJ it. So I was like, fucking A, man. All I'd done at that point was Ska and punk. So I thought, this is going to be a nice opportunity for me to, you know, stretch my skill set a little bit and go into different areas that I haven't been before. I didn't know there was no support till day one, which is also the day after Download. So I was fucked, like on a week-long festival hangover, just hit me all in one day. I'm on one of those tiny little flyby planes going to Glasgow, like shaking in the air, all this turbulence, having a full-on anxiety attack, just like, oh my god, get me to the venue. I get to the venue and they're like, doors are at 6, House of Pain are on at 9, and you're basically on for 2.5 hours.
Ugh.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? So you're just expecting me to stand on stage and just play music to people for 2.5 hours? And they're like, yep. So that's what I did for 4 nights in a row, right? And let me tell you, House of Pain fans, in the one corner, you've got angry Eastern European skinhead thugs who are like the DJ Lethal, because he's got his own fan base. And I imagine they're both at House of Pain and Biscuit shows. And they're just like Polish dudes, Romanians, Czechs, just gnarly brick lane motherfuckers. And that's their one night to go out, drink and fight. They're in one corner. There's like the old school, very snobbish hip hop heads in another that are looking at me and they're like, well, this guy ain't fucking beat matching. He's not scratching. Who is this chump? And then you basically got the only corner of fans that you can really tap into and win over, which is like that sort of new metal fan base, if you will, that are loosely fans of Limp Bizkit, so they like Lethal from that, but they love Jump Around, and they basically just like rock alternative anthems.
Yeah.
So you basically have to get them on side, get them dancing, then the sort of Polish, you know, Eastern European guys start getting excited and they bring it in, and then the hip hop heads eventually, after folding their arms and shaking their heads for the best part of 2.5 hours, by the end go, you know what, fair enough, you warm the crowd up. And I'll say this, and I'll say it like objectively, every night by the end, I won them over. But awesome. It was honestly the longest, toughest 2.5 hours of my fucking life every night. And that's when I started getting really reliant on the mic, and you'd have to engage with them and interact. You can't just stand there for 2 hours and just hit play with no element of showmanship or interaction, because they're just going to start throwing shit and fuck. And it was a baptism of fire. But so after I got that, I was like, right, you put me in front of any crowd now and I'll win them over. And I'm still yet to fail. Nice. So Steel Panther was the ultimate, because it was like, are you telling me I just have to go out and play like Sunset Strip glam metal bands to people who are dressed up with the pure soul intention of going out to sing, drink, dance and party, like they are the dream crowd? And they were all so nice and so welcoming, and the band themselves, do you know those guys?
Do I know them? No. But we had Ben Hammond was the front of house guy, and now we're front of house guy. Right. But yeah, he sings their praises all the time.
Yeah, they treated me like absolute gold. They had no limits in place. Sometimes I won't name check, but sometimes bands will be like, right, bring him down, you know, because we don't want to follow too much of a good set.
Yeah.
Because then we can just phone in ours. Steel Panther were like, you can have it as loud as you want. You can have the decks wherever you want on the stage.
I think a lot of
them gave me full 45-minute sets. So I did one 45-minute set, then Gus G played, then another 45-minute set, then them. I played right up till they came on stage. So I finished every night with Bohemian Rhapsody. The movie had just come out. I was dressed as Wayne from Wayne's World. It was the perfect storm of elements. And yeah, they were just like, you just go to town and fucking entertain them and have fun.
Yeah.
But there was no like insecurities on their part.
I think, people listening to this will not realize that like headline bands have the power to make support bands and DJs quieter. Like that's I completely forgot that happens. Like you could be like, oh yeah, I don't want you as loud as us.
And it's all because they either aren't confident enough. Like, I love nothing more than a band like Steel Panther are so confident in their ability to crush and entertain that they're like, you don't do what you want out there.
Yeah.
It's not going to affect our show. If anything, and this is what bands are so stupid, they need to realize, if anything, it's going to make their show better, because by the time they come on stage, the crowd are going to be ravenous and fucking ready to explode rather than bored, aloof, like looking at their watch going, oh my God, is it time yet? You want the whole room singing and partying the second you come on stage, and then you just take it, you know, to the fucking moon.
Yep, correct. Yes. What a mad thing. I don't want people to be as loud. I don't want someone to be as loud as us. We sound loud. Like, grow up, man. Mad. Like, we never did that. Like, we never did anything like that, I don't think. And put
who treated you the worst on the road? Do you ever get treated really bad by anyone?
No, I don't think so. Not that I can think of the top of my head. I have mentioned before that we took Hollywood Undead on their first tour, like first support tour. But yeah,
there's so much politics involved. Well, there's politics in all of it. There's politics in journalism. Oh, there's yes. politics in the live event side. There's just, I mean, this industry from the outside in looks like so much fun, and it is. And if you love the craft, and I've spoken to a couple of different people about it, if you get in this world, this industry, just to meet famous people and go to cool events, then there's something inherently wrong with your yeah. personality, and you won't last, because you need to love the craft. You know, if you're a musician, you need to love writing songs and performing. If you're a journalist, you need to love writing. If you're a presenter, you need to just love the art of this, whether it's TV, radio, podcast, whatever, because people see through those sycophantic phony people that just want to be like in the scene.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's too much of that now, you know, with social media, without going on the old man rant. A lot of people now just want to go, oh, I need to go to the show to Instagram the past to say I've been. Yeah, and then I'll probably leave before the end and not even really stay for the gig or hang out or bother with the band themselves whilst they're on stage. I just want to get that photo with them afterwards. It's like, no, you've got to respect like the actual, and that's why it's been so devalued, I think. That's why magazine sales are dropping. You know, people aren't listening to radio stations anymore. Bands aren't selling CDs, because not enough people are actually just respecting the craft. Yeah. And just going, oh, wow, you've taken the time to create something for us to enjoy.
But I also think with creating music now, it's kind of getting easier, I guess, with, like, laptops. And, like, I was watching, like, a Sinister Gates has got a new guitar out, right? And it's got, basically, you play a note and it will just hold it forever, right? And it's got this one on it that it can turn into harmonics. So every note you hit sounds like a pinched harmonic, which are very, very difficult to do if you're a guitar player. Like, it takes years. You don't need to learn them anymore. Like, you've just got this guitar that does it now. So I think with, as we're going on, I think music's getting easier to create, but also then kids are seeing, like, are not caring enough about, like, rock music, because they're like, oh, well, I could do that on GarageBand and this new guitar I've got. So yeah, I think that's kind of where it's dropping off. But again, as I said earlier, there's some exciting new bands. And I think rock will be making a comeback very soon, hopefully.
I don't care if it ever doesn't, because for me, exciting music should be underground. It should be truly alternative. And there'll always be incredible bands writing kick-ass guitar music. Fucking who cares if it's not in the charts?
Yeah.
For me, I know a lot of people, oh, we need future headliners and all this, but do we really? Because I would sooner go to a small club show than some big corporate festival anyway. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, and I'm not dissing, because I work with a lot of these festivals and they're friends of mine who work for them, but for me, the future of music and the life source of music is always the kids in the bedroom and the bands in the basements. Yeah. Like, that's where it will always thrive and survive. And so just go to more shows of that level and support new music. Really, if you see a new band or a support band, buy a t-shirt, like buy an album, because that 10 quid could be the difference between them getting to the next show or not, could
completely
it? And so many bands quit because they can't afford to do it, and that's the sole reason. It's not because they're not enjoying it or because they're not great. It's fuck, we can't actually make this work. And now so and so's got a kid, I've got, you know, business going on the side that I need to keep payments up with, and financial insecurity is obviously part and parcel of the trade, isn't it? But if you can take the time to just reward someone for their work with a fiver for a CD or a tenner for a t-shirt or whatever, or go over to patreon.com/lifeinthestars.
Well, this is what I was gonna say. No, everybody listen to this. Definitely check out Life in the Stocks.
Please do just listen to the podcast. Yeah, that would be a good start.
Yeah, check out patreon.com/lifeinthestocks as well. Where else can people find you and get at you, Matt?
They can find me at flat one, number 100. My brand new house here in Walthamstow in London. They can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at MattStocksDJ. I'm also, there's a couple more tours that I'm sort of working on at the moment. I'd like to try and do one every few months if I can.
Yeah.
Because that Steel Panther one was just the most fun I've ever had. It was the dream.
You know, definitely.
Being on the road is the best.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely looking myself get back into DJ now. I did one in Cardiff a couple of weeks ago and it was fucking brilliant and I absolutely loved it.
Oh yeah, so also every Friday and Saturday you can find me in London at the World's End in Camden. If I'm not on tour, that's where I'll be, so come by and buy me a tequila.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us to your fantastic new house.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to be your first guests in the new house.
Exactly. Oh, well, yeah, nice. You're not just podcast guests, but actual real life people in the place.
Gonna christen the toilet now.
The cleaner was very quiet, wasn't she, as well? I don't want people thinking I'm some kind of like middle class. I don't pay the cleaner. It's the landlady. She pays every 2 weeks for a cleaner to come. And so she was here in the background working. I wanted to just clear that up. Yeah. I'm not the kind of guy that can't do his own cleaning. But if the landlady's...
Alfred, get out of here!
Venezuela!
Yeah. I've got a podcast going on at the moment. Could you get away?
But so if it's on offer, then enjoy the cleanliness.
Definitely, yeah.
But well, dudes, keep on it. And I love what you do. I've heard a couple of episodes. Thank I think they're really great fun.
Snap the other way around as well.
You know, there's not enough Welsh voices on the podcast airwaves. Well, this is quite a two-dimensional thing, can't it? The minute something becomes popular, every podcast show is like a early 30s white comedian, and that's almost every podcast host is that. So it's great to hear, you know, a bit of not that Welsh people are an ethnic minority, but it is great to hear, you know,
we're up for being an ethnic minority.
It's great to hear variety on the airwaves, as with anything in life.
Sweet, thank you very much, man.
Awesome. Thank you.
Zamnen, he beat us to it, a bastard.
I've studied
yes.
I know.
Yes, cheers, thank you very much, man. Thank you. You're listening to Zamnen Podcast. Lovely stuff. Not my words, the words of Top Gear magazine.
I didn't know Matt Stocks was featured in Top Gear magazine.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
He kept that quiet, didn't
he? Yeah.
Mad.
Great chat. Absolutely great chat.
Lovely to go down to his new house in the London and get him to open up all about mad things.
Everything, everything. What a lovely, lovely guy. I've known him for years. He's one of those press people that you kind of meet and you bond with and you have camaraderie with for life. And he's always been great to me from the early days of seeing him about and stuff. So yeah, thank you very much again to Matt Stocks. Great stories. Check out his podcast.
Yes, Life in the Stocks. Season 2 is out now.
Yes.
And
he's had some fantastic guests. And they cover all topics as well.
Yeah. But I thought in that chat, all three of us opened up about a lot of things that we haven't really talked about before. So, it was really interesting to see. And, while you're checking things out as well, as Matt mentioned, he's got that Attack of the Podcasts 2 event in London on the 20th of July. So go and check that out as well. He mentioned about maybe you and me jumping on a few live shows with him in the future. So
yeah, that would be good. If people are interested in that, please get at us on our socials at SappeningPod on Twitter and on Instagram. We should really make a Facebook page, I think.
Maybe, but I would be well up for doing some live events.
Would you?
Yeah, I would, to be fair.
Good.
Try for you. You've been on stage before, haven't you, Sean, and all that? You know, I haven't done any of
them. Whoa, tacking me. I haven't said word one to you yet. Whoa.
But yeah, maybe I'd like to do some as well.
All right, cool. I'm up for it if people are interested. If people will come, I don't want to just...
Well, just you and me.
We can do this, you. Do you know what I mean? Like, we don't have to go to a big hall to be sat there and look sad and have lost money. So if people are interested in coming to see us live, for some reason, doing this with a guest, get at us on our socials, as I've just said.
Cool.
Also, Matt Stocks is taking part in the Fireball Tour.
Woo!
Through September with Less Than Jake and the Mighty Goldfinger.
Wow.
Yeah.
That'll be a good one.
That'll be very, very good.
And if you're interested in that, then listen all back to the Slam Dunk special of Saturday Podcast with Less Than Jake. Not only talk about that, but a host of other things as well.
Yes. Nice plug. Yes. Well remembered. Yes. Professional.
That's
what
I'm here for.
Why I'm here.
That's
you could have ended there. That's why I'm here. Is that a Welsh thing? I feel like that's a really Welsh thing.
That probably is a really Welsh thing. Anyway.
By here now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carry on.
I'll be there now in a minute.
So, if you've enjoyed any of this bollocks that we've spouted or any of the previous episodes, this is your first episode, checking us out. Thank you very much. Yeah. We genuinely, genuinely appreciate it.
We do.
Please go back and check out some of the other episodes. There's 32 others.
Yeah, make sure you're subscribing on any platform you listen to as well, whether it be Spotify, Acast, Apple Podcasts, or all other platforms. And let us know you've been listening and tag us in your Instagram stories and stuff like that. And then while you're checking things out, head over to patreon.com/sapnin.
Nice.
And get involved with our little community over there and all the different tiers. And while we're talking about it, we might as well use this time to thank the elite members of our Patreon community, those are the higher tiers, and those are as follows.
I like the way you've set me up just to read names. Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much to the awesome Dana Lasnova, John Price, Emma Barber, Liam Connolly, Kylie Wheeler, Scarla Charlton, Janelle Caston, Paul Hirschfield, Sam Ledgerwood, Mitch Perry, Becca Vaughan, Kirsty Dean, Emily Senegals, Lucy Deards, Martina McManus, Hugh Stockwell, Mark Platten, John and Emma, Marcy Jacobson, Kieran Lewis, Sharif Awadali, Jordan Burchard, Mike Cunningham, Lydia Henderson, Livy Cropper, Scott Jones, Becky Mayoko, Luke Price, Tony Michael, Jamie Bloor, Jenny Robinson, Kelly Cannon, and last but not least, she's got the same initials as me, Samantha Spray.
Oh yeah, she does.
That's a lot of names. Thank you very much, guys. It genuinely, genuinely makes this podcast happen.
It does, and we appreciate you more than I like ice cream. And if you've listened to
any, Jesus Christ,
that's a lot. Yes,
I thought you were going to say that's a lie.
No, it's a lot.
Oh, okay,
I like them.
Cool. Well, thank you very much to those people. And
thanks for listening. This has been episode 33 of Sat in the Podcast.
Yes, episode 34 shall be out next Friday.
It will be out.
Our 2003 special.
Yes, and it's going to be full of some of your favourite bands. So make sure you check that out. And until then, as Sean says, never die.
What do you say then? As Morgan says, as Sean says, never die.
As
all right,
Morgan
let's
says, as Sean
Ta-da
says.
Ta-da, everyone. Sat-nin.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.